This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. For Philip Larkin, in his poem Here, from the Whitsun Weddings, the journey from Hull towards Spurnhead was one of swerving to solitude of skies and scarecrows, haystacks, hares and pheasants, and the widening river's slow presence, the piled gold clouds, the shining gull-marked mud. Few people venture out onto Spurnhead, the spindly, crooked spit of land that extends southwards into the Humber estuary. A little over 3 miles long, some stretches are barely 50 feet wide, its boundaries and dimensions never defined, being constantly honed and reshaped by the tides and the pounding of the North Sea. The Holderness coast to the north of Spurn is under constant attack from the North Sea, villages and towns under threat, countless more devoured by the waves over centuries, including the once prosperous and now Atlantis-like Ravenserod, swallowed by the sea in the middle of the 14th century. There are pieces and traces of those lost settlements in the very fabric of Spurn, a porous, vulnerable, stubborn repository of stories. Spurn has a rugged beauty beneath vast skies, but that beauty is not exactly what you call conventional. Picking your way along the sand and tangles of sea buckthorn, it's easy to forget to look up and appreciate the vast skies and wide horizon, the feeling of space, of possibility, of mystery. The only major landmark is the old lighthouse at the end of the spit. While there was some kind of light there from as far back as the 15th century, this one was built in the twilight of the 19th and was decommissioned in 1985. One visitor in the summer of 1928 struggled to appreciate the beauty and the mystery of Spurn. Here's his account, called At Lonely Spurn, Some Impressions. The number of people who visit Kilnsea and those who, having reached that place, venture on to Spurn Point will, from observation, provide a striking contrast. What is the reason? Those who have not yet made their acquaintance with the district will be inclined to ask. The distance between the two spots is, admittedly, only a matter of a few miles, but here is the explanation. Those generally who desire to intrude into the domain of the hardy folk at Spurn must undertake, unless of course they invade by water or air, a wearying and arduous journey on foot. It is practically impossible for an ordinary motor car to accomplish the journey, owing to the fact that there is not the slightest resemblance of a road up the narrow strip of barren land. It might be possible along either of the shores, but then who would contemplate such a foolhardy expedition? Last weekend, consequent on a premeditated journey by bicycle, the writer and three colleagues found ourselves just below Kilnsea, the jumping-off place, speaking aeronautically, for Spurn Point. We took off down the sandy fringe of the Humber foreshore with our goal towering majestically against a misty background, and at the end of a narrow, scimitar-like strip of land, the lighthouse. The scenery on our tramp could not, by any stretch of the imagination, be described as picturesque. The great expanse of mud left by the Humber being a particular eyesore. Nevertheless, we found the shore not altogether devoid of interest. An electric bulb, crabs, beef and treacle tins galore, baskets and bottles of dirty water. These were but few objects among a huge assortment left by the receded tide. Ultimately, however, Our course along the yielding sands came abruptly to an end, a miniature bathing pool obstructing our passage, and had perforce to continue our way along the single-track railway line running down the centre of the head. Now this anonymous 1928 correspondent missed the sense of mystery at Spurn, the almost infinite number of secrets it holds, some it hints at, most it retains. In 1922, a sailing ship was lost on Spurn during a storm. No crew were found. The damage so bad, the identity of the vessel was never established. The only clue offered up by Spurn was a seaman's chest washed ashore, containing some clothes and a receipt for wool purchased at Torshavn in the Faroe Islands from a Johanna Hansen. Other wreckage was found marked Reykjavik. Somewhere in the northern latitudes, there were households destined never to know what became of their menfolk. From then onwards, our pace became one monotonous step from sleeper to sleeper, which were very often entirely submerged in parts by sand. At last, we came upon this lonely guardian of the Humber in all her solitude. Curious and fascinated, we halted here and there, viewing as though some relics of bygone age the weird collection of buildings. Yonder was a wooden shack, identical with those out in the west. And there to the left was a house, surrounded by a circular brick wall several feet high. A neat bungalow kind of structure next drew our attention, the ground in front being particularly well laid out with various stones. Then there was a row of darkly coloured houses fronting the river, protected by rocks and wooden piles. The splendid lighthouse, peering proudly out to sea, was naturally an object of genuine admiration, as was the lifeboat house and the slipway, but we had to be content with only exterior examination of the Humber defence grounds and buildings. We caught glimpses of some of the sturdy folk of the lifeboat crew, who were, for who could not be impressed and full of admiration for these people and their noble calling, heroes every one. However, it did not take us long to make a thorough tour of inspection of everything of interest, and having satisfied our curiosity, laid down on the sands to rest a while. And then, as we lay back, breathing in the crisp sea air, the utter loneliness of the place forced itself upon us. Except for the occasional ship's buzzer breaking the tranquillity, the only sound to be heard was the waves on the shore. For a time, we immensely enjoyed the wonderful serenity of this desolate outpost, but gradually it became oppressive, and we longed to return to civilization once more. We did not delay our departure and returned to the winding trail for home. The lighthouse stood out boldly against the skyline. Very rarely, Spurn offers up a solution to one of its mysteries. In 1893, a piece of timber washed ashore that was like a voice speaking from the depths and darkness of the North Sea. On the last day of November 1891, the bark Kala'u had loaded up with 1,100 tons of coal and sailed out of Hull, destined for Port Elizabeth, with 16 crew and an experienced local pilot aboard. The pilot would see the Kala'u as far as the downs off the coast of Kent, disembark at Dover, and head for home. At first, when there was no sign of the pilot, it was hoped the Kala'u had anchored in the Grimsby Roads to see out a period of bad weather. But soon, that awful, creeping dread, feared by seafaring families everywhere, grew with the lengthening silence. Nothing was heard of or from the Kala'u. Something had happened, in the North Sea. Something terrible. As the weeks turned into months, the families resigned themselves to never knowing, never having a grave to tend. A teakwood bucket with the name of the ship washed up on the coast of the Netherlands. And then, in 1893, almost 2 years after the ship had set sail, a piece of timber was picked up by a coastguard on the shore at Spurn. It could have been any old piece of driftwood, but beneath the weed and the mud, something was written on the wood. Whoever picks this up shall know that the Kalaru was run down by an unknown steamer, it read. There was more on the reverse, written in the same hand. May the Lord comfort my mother. No more time. Sinking. Dawson. William Dawson was a teenage apprentice at the Hull Navigation School. He'd set sail on the Kalaru. It was his first voyage. The newspapers made much of Dawson's presence of mind, a kind of heroism, they called it. A few days after the discovery, a letter appeared in a Hull newspaper under the title Hero of the Kalaru. May I, the father of the boy Dawson, who, it will be remembered, was lost with the ill-fated Kalaru, be allowed to rectify a little misunderstanding which seems to exist in the public mind, it read, and to state that the mother is not a widow. I also wish to convey to the public, through your columns, our deep gratitude for the kindly sympathy which they have evinced towards us at this, our greatest bereavement. At the same time, we would request that the sad event be referred to in the papers as little as possible. It opens old wounds afresh, which time alone can heal. Alfred Dawson, 29 Porter Street, Hull, February 22nd, 1893. Fast-shadowed wheat fields, wrote Larkin, running high as hedges isolate villages, where removed lives loneliness clarifies. Here silence stands like heat. Ancient Spurn's shape shifts, elusive under huge skies, keeping its secrets, sharing only a few. And even then, as Alfred Dawson's heartbreaking letter reveals, the comfort of knowledge can also bring just more pain. And past the poppy's bluish neutral distance ends the land suddenly beyond a beach of shapes and shingle, Larkin wrote. Here is unfenced existence, facing the sun, untalkative, out of reach. That was A Coastal Story. I'm Charlie Connolly. And welcome to Series 5 of Coastal Stories. It's good to be back. Sorry, it's been a while. Life just gets busier. Now, part of that busyness is thanks to the centenary of the shipping forecast that's coming in 2024. And I've two exciting things to tell you about on that score. First, there's a new edition of Attentional Shipping coming down the pipe. It's pretty much the same as the old one, only I've taken out a few bits here and there I didn't like, and corrected a couple of mistakes that people have been emailing me about for more than a decade now. I've written a new introduction, though, featuring that iron horse of the inshore waters forecast, Ardnamurchan Point. Second, yours truly has taken up the sock and buskin, and put together a one-man show celebrating the shipping forecast, and that's coming to a theatre near you. Soon. Assuming that is that you live near a theatre where it's going to be on. Now it's a full length show with an interval and everything, and even some snazzy audio visual stuff. Well, snazzy for me, There's no CGI involved or anything. I'll post dates as they happen on the Coastal Stories podcast Facebook page and on my personal Facebook page, which you can find by searching for Charlie Connolly Author. I'm off on a tour of Ireland in January. That's January 2024 if you're listening in the future, in which case can you send me the next few Grand National winners, please, so I can get some bets on. I'm at the Dot Theatre in Dublin on the 25th and the 26th of January, although that second show is sold out, so you might want to book the first night. And soon, as there are only a few seats left for that one. Then I'm at the Linen Hall in Castlebar, County Mayo, on the 31st of January, followed by the Old Courthouse in Lismore, County Waterford, the following night, the 1st of February. Then on the 3rd of February, you'll find me in the north of Ireland at Cushendall Golf Club. I know. Back in England, I'm at the Walker Theatre in Shrewsbury on the 28th of February. And tickets for that are already going well, so if you're in the area, get in quick is my advice. On the 4th of March, I'm in Somerset at Froome's lovely Merlin Theatre. And on the 7th of March, you'll find me at the Astor Theatre in Deal, which already feels like a bit of a homecoming, even though I only lived there for 4 years. I'll be announcing more dates soon, all over the place, from Dorset to Shetland, so look out for my absolute ship show coming to a town near you. It's exciting, this, especially considering my only other theatrical stage experience was as a wriggle suite that wriggles delightfully in your tummy in a school production of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when I was about 6. All I had to do was wriggle from one side of the stage to the other, wearing a potato sack covered in crepe paper. The attentional shipping show features a bit more than that. A little bit more than that. And less wriggling. Unless things get really weird. Anyway, it's good to be bringing you some more Coastal Stories. Series 5, eh? Blimey. As I explained in the trailer for this series a while back, these episodes probably won't be showing up weekly, but they will be as regular as I can make them. I really appreciate you sticking with me and this little brine-encrusted storytelling podcast. Thank you. Let the stories recommence.